afternoon. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is April 16, 2016. The time is 3:11 p.m. If you're joining us off-net or online, we're in Juneau, Alaska, in the State Capitol, Room 532. This is the Senate Finance Committee. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me this afternoon, Co-Chairman Kelly.
Hello.
Vice Chairman Michicki.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Senator Bishop.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
We are at full complement today. On today's agenda is SB 118, Muni Energy Improvement Assessment Bonds. If you recall, that was a bill that was a Senate version, and we have the House version in our possession now. HB 373, Approval of Sale of Royalty Oil to Tesoro. SB 55, Optometry and Optometrist. HB 41, Sports Fishing Services, HB 290, extending the Real Estate Commission. To put on notice for the general public, Sunday, April 17, 2016, at 8 a.m., we'll have a presentation on Senate Bill 130, Taxes Credit Interest Refund, from Janik Mayer from Analytica. So that will be at least an hour, if not an hour and a half. Following that will be HB 289, Board of Barbers and Hairdressers, HB 143, ADA Bonds, Loans, Funds, AEA Loans, HB 268, ADA Dividend Estate, Income Valuation, HB 290, Extension of the Real Estate Commission, HB 314, Alaska Regional Economic Assistance Program, HB 259. Again, those bills are 8 a.m. tomorrow. Is there anything else to come before the committee? If I could direct your attention to HB 118. As you recall, the companion bill was SB 56, previously heard and held. Brief at ease. Back on the record, public hearing was held on 4-9-2015, actually. This is an identical bill to our Senate version. Mr. Terrio, if you'd give us a higher-level overview of House Bill 118.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And as you indicated, the committee earlier on March 14th had adopted a CS for the Senate version. When the House decided to move on their version, they adopted identical language, and that is the language that passed over in House Bill 118. Primarily, the bill before you, it's only six sections long. The fifth section establishes a new plan, a program in law, that would allow local governments that levy property tax to work with their business community, local lenders, and potential outside sources of money to loan money for energy improvements to commercial properties. The strength of this mechanism is that the repayment of those loans is done through a voluntary assessment that the owner of the property agrees to have added to their yearly tax bill. That extra assessment then has the full collection power of the local government collecting the taxes and assessments, and therefore loans across the country that are lent out to businesses utilizing this mechanism have a very, very low default rate. Because of that low default rate, we're able to bring low-cost capital because the lending is low risk. Sections 1, 2, and 3 were added to the bill, one through four, excuse me, just clarifying the in existing sections of the AS-29, the different governments that can allow this program, just adding to the list of programs for first and second class boroughs. Then when you get to section 5, which is on page 3, it really lays out a very robust process the local government has to go through in order to initiate this this program at a local level. They have to pass a resolution conveying to the business community that they plan to initiate this process. They have to detail the source of money that's going to be used. They have to detail the type of contractual language that will be used. So really lay that out. Then there's a requirement for a public hearing. And then they have to go through their local, regular local process to introduce an ordinance, take that ordinance to public hearing, and then pass the ordinance putting the mechanism into place. It is voluntary for the local governments to use. If the local government chooses to allow it, it's voluntary for the individual property owner to use. So nobody is being forced to do anything against their will. There are real protections that are built into the bill so that we're not incenting a business to actually make improvements to the property that don't make economic sense. It requires an energy audit to suggest which improvements make sense for the property. And once the improvements are done, you have to have a follow-up audit to show that the improvements were done correctly. So that is very similar to the process that was in place for the Alaska Housing Finance for the energy rebate program that many Alaskans took advantage of. There are protections in here if you have a current commercial mortgage on your property. Before you can do the PACE financing, you have to get the permission of that local lender to actually allow the PACE financing, because the PACE financing will become a superior lien on the property. And we have worked with the Alaska Bankers Association and assured them that that protection is in there. The local government cannot use general obligation bonds to come up with a pool of money from the lending. And there are protections in here that clarify that the local government cannot take any kind of coercive action to force a commercial property owner to use the program. We believe this is going to help the state of Alaska and local governments work with their business communities to get access to federal funds that actually come with very low interest rates. We received a letter yesterday, actually, the Alaska Energy Authority did, responding to a letter that was put to them from the Energy Authority to get clarification of whether the PACE mechanism would qualify as a preferred repayment mechanism to get access to these federal funds, and the answer came back positive. So we think that, again, it will help us to work with local governments to access those federal funds. And so with that, Madam Chairman, I think it's a tool that can be used at the local level to move towards achieving the goal that was established by the legislature a couple of years ago to improve energy efficiency across the board in the state of Alaska.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Machicki, are you ready to cover the fiscal note?
I am, Madam Chair. We have one fiscal note for 118. The department is Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. The appropriation is the Alaska Energy Authority, and the allocation is the statewide project development alternative energy and efficiency. The OMB component number is 2888. And Madam Chair, I have a zero fiscal note from FY17 through FY22 with no capital and no added employees. This essentially allows local governments and businesses to opt in on a voluntary basis to adopt PACE financing mechanisms, but there is no fiscal impact to the AEA, the state of Alaska, or any state agency with the passage of this proposed legislation.
Thank you. Are there questions on the fiscal note? Thank you for your presentation, former Senator Terrio.
Thank you.
What's the will of the body? Senator Machicki.
Madam Chair, I move the committee substitute for House Bill 118 Finance 29-GH1021/P from committee with the attached fiscal note and committee recommendations.
Is there any objection?
I just wanted to see the
ones
that
are
materials.
Do you maintain your objections, Senator Kelly?
I do not object.
No objections. The CS for House Bill number 118 Finance /P moves from committee with attached fiscal note and individual committee recommendation. Read for these while we sign the documents. Record. The next item before us is House Bill 373. A bit of history. On 4-8-2006, the public hearing was opened and closed. If we could go through the fiscal note quickly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have one fiscal note for HB 373. The department is Department of Natural Resources. The appropriation is oil and gas. The allocation is oil and gas. And the OMB component number is 439. This is a zero fiscal note on cost from FY17 through FY22, Madam Chair. And we have the following values in revenue. Change in revenue to the positive for FY17, $8,085,000. In FY18, $8,655,000. In FY19, $9,110,000. FY20, $9,421,000. FY21, $9,965,000, and indeterminate on the level of revenue in FY22.
Senator Michicki, in the analysis on the back, there's a minimum for the state of Alaska. Can you let the people know what the minimum is that we expect to receive from this, the passage of this bill?
The total of the numbers I just gave is the likely minimum, Madam Chair, and that is a net positive to the state from the RIK.
Royalty in kind?
The royalty in kind value of approximately $45.2 million in additional revenue.
Mr. Shine, could you tell the people of Alaska what House Bill 373 does and why it's a good thing for Alaska?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Jim Scheim with the Department of Natural Resources. This revised fiscal note is in response to the committee's comments. When we first presented the bill about a week ago, we had previously provided an indeterminate fiscal note, and looking back at the previous royalty and kind contracts over the recent history, we had mirrored what was done in prior contracts and basically providing an indeterminate fiscal note because of the difficulty in projecting the price of oil. This fiscal note does represent the expected benefit that we will receive over royalty and value over the next 5 years of approximately $8 to $9 million per year. This is a contract for the sale of 20,000 to 25,000 barrels of royalty oil to Tesoro per day beginning August 1st, 2016 for 5 years.
And these figures represent the difference essentially between in a royalty in kind and a royalty in value situation. The royalty in value, the net back formula, includes a marine transportation deduction of approximately $3.50. In a royalty in kind situation, which we have before us, we have a static $1.95 per barrel deduction as a location differential. And the delta between the $1.95 and the $3.50 is essentially the benefit that you're seeing in the fiscal note represented. And it increases, as Senator Richicki indicated, from FY17 through FY22. And if you will, I direct the member's attention to page 11 of the best interest finding, another chart that we looked at in the previous hearing, which shows the projected increase in marine transportation costs over the next 5 years. So that increase in the fiscal impact or revenue to the state over the next 5 years is represented basically the delta between $1.95 and the increased average price per barrel of the marine transportation deduction. And so that's what the fiscal note represents.
Are there questions from committee members? What's the will of the body? Senator Michiki.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 373-29-GH2225/alpha from committee with the attached fiscal note and committee recommendations.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, the House Bill 373-A moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Brief of these while we sign the document. On the record, the next item before us is Senate Bill 5-5. If I could invite Senator Giesel and her staff, actually, Ms. Schein first. Senator Michiki, if we could adopt a CS.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the committee substitute for Senate Bill 55 Finance 29-LS0524G before the committee as our working document.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
For the record, Aaron Schein, staff of Senator McKinnon and the Senate Finance Committee. The CS before you incorporates an amendment that the committee adopted, I believe it was yesterday, and that was on line 6, and we deleted by agreement with the State Medical Board, comma.
Is there any questions? I'll remove my objection to adopting the CS for Senate Bill 55-G. Any further objections? Version G is adopted and before us. Senator Giesel? Senator Giesel, we'll cover the fiscal note first and then we'll come to you. Senator Michiki?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have one fiscal note from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. The appropriation is corporations, business, and professional licensing. The allocation is the same. The OMB component number is 2360. The only cost on this bill is if the bill passes, the division will require $2,500 to cover legal costs to amend regulations, printing, and postage in the first year. There is no additional cost And this is receipt supported services. It's DGF, Madam Chair. Licensing fees. So there's no cost to the state, and there is no additional cost from FY18 through FY22. No capital and no additional employees.
Thank you. Are there questions on the fiscal note? We've been zeroing them out, Senator Giesel, but since it's receipts, I think we'll leave it alone. Senator Giesel, are you okay with the CS that we've adopted?
Madam Chair, for the record, Senator Kathy Giesel, District N. Yes, Madam Chair, I am very accepted of the committee substitute.
For the people of Alaska, could you give us a high-level overview of what Senate Bill 55 does?
Thank you, Madam Chair. High-level overview, Senate Bill 55 updates 40-year-old statutes which govern the practice of optometry in the state, updating and simply authorizing the board to continue regulating the practice of optometry through the usual process of regulation.
Thank you. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Kelly.
Just a quick one, just so that the record is clarified. We had testimony a couple days ago regarding this bill, and there was reference made to an experience that a testifier had with an optometry school in Washington. Can you clarify, is there, what's up with that?
Senator Kelly, through the chair, yes, one of the eye surgeons who testified at the last hearing of this bill portrayed that he had been denied access to a school of optometry in Washington State. There is not now, nor has there ever been, a school of optometry either in Washington State or in Washington, D.C., in case that person had misspoken. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I just wanted that clarification on the record.
Thank you. And for the record, the public hearing was open and closed on 4/14/2016. Senator Hoffman. Did you have a question? Senator Michicki?
I might have a question for Dr. Gonison, Madam Chair, if that's up to you, but I don't have one for the Senator Giesel at this time.
State your question.
Dr. Gonison, I some of the concern, and I just wanted to get this on the record, is that we changed the definition. The definition used to say optometry means the examination, diagnosis, and treatment of conditions of human eyes and visual system. It used to cover surgery in the definition. It no longer does. And I want to continue on. I compared it with dentistry. When I compare the definition of dentistry, the definition of dentistry looks more like the new definition of optometry. It doesn't say that dentists should not perform surgery or other pharmaceutical agents, or it's not that descriptive. Do you think the new definition of optometry in Senate Bill 55 allows surgery, and can you explain why it doesn't?
Yes, can you hear me?
We can. Welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you. I'm down in Kenai. For the record, this is Jeff Gonison, optometrist, licensed 39 years in Alaska, former chair of the optometry board. Through the chair, thank you for your question. Yes, the new definition is borrowed from the dentistry definition, and the reason it took out x-ray, surgery, those other things is because optometry currently does a few of those other things. It's a 40-year-old definition, and the whole point of that is it does not allow optometrists to do surgery. It doesn't allow optometrists to do anything, but it authorizes the board to determine what our scope of practice is so that as new things come along. Now, for 39 years, I've done minor surgery on the eye. So it's technically surgery, but it's only minor, like taking a piece of metal out of someone's cornea, you know, and brushing out the rust. So there are minor surgery procedures we do, some lid bumps and lumps and so forth. We do not do invasive into the go over the eye surgery. That's what the ophthalmologists do. We don't do cataract surgery. We don't do LASIK laser surgery. But the board would have the ability under this definition if they invent some new, for example, we do ultrasound on the eye. And there's no prohibition on that. But this, I hope that makes sense, that what this allows, like the dental board, is for the board to determine what the scope of practice is and still protect the public. You see, legislators are usually not well equipped to make decisions on the details of medical procedures. That's why the legislature creates these regulatory boards, to protect the public, and they regulate the details of practice. For example, the legislature doesn't prohibit a family doctor from doing heart surgery, but the board regulates this. So I can assure you there's nothing dangerous in this bill whatsoever. Our opposition, our competition, has testified off and on for 40 years that, you know, how bad everything will be, and none of it's ever come true because it's not true. I hope I answered your question.
Quick follow-up, Madam Chair.
Certainly, Senator Michiki.
So when I look at your limitation on practice in A and B, it sort of matches the scope in the dentistry that says they may only perform the services if they're within the scope of the dentist's education, training, experience, and in accord with the generally recognized ethical precepts of the dental profession, which is under 0836360, and the new definition seems modeled on that pretense. Would you agree with that, Dr. Gonison?
Through the chair, Senator, that is correct. It was basically borrowed from the dental statute, and Section 5 of the bill clearly states that no licensee can do anything beyond their level of training and qualification, and the board is there to protect the public and ensure that happens.
That makes me much more comfortable. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Michiki. Other questions for the sponsor? Senator Alton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, this is a question for Dr. Gonison. Dr. Gonison, on page 2, line 18, it says, it was brought to my attention that there was a question here. It says under subsections, or section 4, subsection E, a licensee may not perform an injection into the ocular globe of the eye that is a derivative of Clostridium botulinum, which leads people to think that they are allowed to give injections into the ocular globe of other derivatives as long as they're not Botox, essentially. Can you clear that up for the person that asked me the question?
Yes, Senator Olson, through the chair. I wasn't involved in the rewriting of that particular line because nobody injects Clostridium botulinum into the eye. It just isn't done. I think it was because there was the previous law says that we can't use Clostridium botulinum. Somebody thought that we'd be running out there doing Botox, which we don't do. And, you know, it doesn't need to be in statute. That's something the board would put in regulation. As far as injections into the eye, that's not something optometrists currently do. Now with all the new drugs for macular degeneration that are injected into the eye, eventually down the road, the ophthalmologist will be too busy, will need help in doing that in their offices, for example, and now they're training nurses to do that. So there is a possibility that there could be injections of medicine into the eye down the road, but I can tell you in the near future that would not happen. And if it were to be authorized, it would only be after adequate training and qualification.
Senator Olson.
Yes. Dr. Gonson, I just want to make sure that I can say to the person that asked the question that optometrists do not inject into the globe of the eye anything that's out there. Is that correct?
Yeah, currently that is correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No further questions.
Senator Giesel, did you have a comment on that?
I did not. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Michiki.
Madam Chair, I move the committee substitute for Senate Bill 5529-LS0524-G from committee with the attached fiscal note and committee recommendations.
Is there objection?
Seeing and hearing none, the CS for Senate Bill Number 55, Finance, /G, moves from committee with attached fiscal note and individual committee recommendations. Brief of these while we sign the paperwork. Back on the record, the next item before the committee is the Senate CS for the CS for House Bill Number 41, Finance, /S. If you recall, earlier today we amended and adopted Amendment Number 1. Amendment Number 2 was offered by Senator Olson. I objected. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The intent of Amendment Number 2 is to go ahead and make it so that incidental to big game hunting and guiding services that are provided by the guides, we don't inadvertently allow or inadvertently have assistant guides that are normally out there that are alongside somebody who has bought a fishing pole and is out there just doing something to wait before either he's already gotten his game and is not allowed to hunt another big game animal and the plane hasn't come in yet to take him out, or the boat or whatever transportation mode that he's got, or that the weather's bad enough that they can't move out.
I'm going to maintain my objection. Is there any further comments? Madam Secretary, could we call the roll on Amendment Number 2?
No.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Bishop?
Pass.
Senator Dunleavy?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator McKinnon?
No.
Senator Kelly?
Yes.
Senator Bishop?
Yes.
The amendment passes. With that, we'll set this bill aside. Next item on the agenda is House Bill 290, extending the Real Estate Commission. If I could have Laura Steidolf from Representative Olson's office present the bill.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laura Steidolf, staff representative Kurt Olson. Before you today is House Bill 290. This legislation extends the termination date of the Real Estate Commission to June 30th, 2018. Each year, the Division of Legislative Audit reviews boards and commissions to determine if they should be reestablished per AS 2444. The Division of Legislative Audit reviewed the activities of the Real Estate Commission. The purpose of this audit was to determine whether there is a demonstrated public need for the board's continued existence and whether it has been operating in an effective manner. As the members noted in the review of the audit in their packets, is the opinion of our auditors the board is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing real estate brokers, associate brokers, and salespeople. As you also may have noted, there were two recommendations. First, the Commission's Chair and the DCCED Division of Administrative Services Director should work together to procure the Master's Errors and Omissions Policy that was required. Second, the Division of Corporation, Business and Public and Professional Licensing should take actions to ensure each case is actively investigated. In closing, the Real Estate Commission serves an important role by improving operations and industry practices by modifying and adopting regulations. However, because their ability to obtain E&O insurance is key to the decision to extend the board, the sponsor feels that the commission should only be extended for 2 years. E&O insurance is a significant statutory duty to protect the public that is not being met. This is a problem that hasn't been solved for 9 years and deserves further scrutiny from the legislature. Thank you for your support of this legislation.
Thank you, Laura. Are there questions from the sponsor? If I could invite Chris Curtis to the microphone. Chris, if you could give us the audit highlights.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor. As Laura mentioned, we did conduct a sunset review. We came out with a 6-year conditional recommendation for extension, and that condition was that the Real Estate Commission obtain an errors and omissions insurance policy, a master policy, by January of 2016. If they were unable to do that, we recommended only a 4-year extension. The audit did have two recommendations. The first is on page 10, the commission should work with the department to obtain errors and omissions insurance policy. The law requiring that insurance passed in 2008. It was effective in 2010. The commission didn't establish regulations for this insurance policy until October of 2014. And when the audit was going on last summer, the commission and the department still had not moved forward with obtaining that insurance. According to the division and the department, policy had not been obtained due to the overall complexity of the project, lack of insurance expertise, and the length of time the commission involved the Department of Law in drafting the regulations. Second recommendation, also on page 10, is that the chief investigator take action to ensure cases are actively investigated and completed timely. There were 235 cases open during the audit period. We tested 36 and found that 29 had significant periods of inactivity. Those periods ranged from over 4 months to 4.5 years. 11 of the 29 cases were ultimately closed because the age of the matter, meaning that it was too old to continue to investigate. Cause of the excessive time lags was due to inadequate monitoring and insufficient oversight to ensure investigations were completed timely. Consequently, consumers may not have been adequately protected from incompetent or unlawful licensees. And both the department and the commission concurred with the recommendations.
Questions from committee members. Senator Dalleavy.
The chair seems to have issues. Would it be better if it was under or monitored by DCCED?
Through the chair, I'm not understanding the question.
So there's 100 occupations monitored by DCCED. There seems to be issues with this. Is there an alternative way to deal with the issue?
Through the chair, the investigations, whether it was monitored by a board or directly by the division, the investigations themselves would continue to be conducted under the division's investigative unit.
Follow-up?
No.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. With that, I'd like to open the public hearing. Thank you, Laura. I'd like to open the public hearing on House Bill 290. Here in Juneau, we have Laura. Oh, Laura, you just testified. Thank you. Butch Moore. Butch, are you there?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you for taking my testimony. My name is Butch Moore. I am sorry to have to come before you today on a real estate commission complaint. The complaint number is 2014-0028. 2436. I filed this complaint back in 2014 on a real estate violations that cost me over $250,000. I filed the complaint with the Real Estate Commission. I had signed, notarized, signed copies of real estate licensee, the broker, and the owner of the company that they were in violation of the real estate statutes. The current real estate broker's manual states that, in fact, if there was a violation that's been established, the case will go to the Attorney General for review and prosecution. The complainant becomes witness in a case brought by the state of Alaska against the licensee. I received a letter on February 25th, 2015, from the Real Estate Commission. It says, in fact, there was a violation in the matter. The Real Estate Commission has taken appropriate disciplinary action for such a violation. I'm sorry, it needs to go to the Attorney General for prosecution. That's what the broker's manual says. I got another letter back on September 22nd, 2015, says, lastly, I can understand your perspectives after reading the broker's manual, which was published in 2006. But please be aware that after reviewing your letter, we are revising the publication. So we're not going to comply with current law with your complaint, although there is a violation. We're not going to prosecute. And in addition, they refuse to review the complaint on the broker and the owner, only the licensee. So my concern is, after hearing what was just stated with cases going from 4 months to 4.5 years, if we're going to have a real estate commission, which I think that we need to have, if they're going to protect the public, then I think they need to do their job and protect the public. This would be no different than having a state trooper pull people over for a DUI and then letting them go. So my request would be that this case is revisited, and in fact, that there are violations that I think that myself and the public need to be protected. Before I filed this complaint, I spoke with numerous realtors and brokers, and everyone I spoke to said the same thing. No one is going to do anything at the Real Estate Commission. So I would ask potentially Representative Kurt Olson's office can get back with me and maybe follow up and reopen this case. And any others that have been neglected or not evaluated properly, I'd like to see the Real Estate Commission do what they're there to do, is protect the public.
Mr. Moore, thank you for your testimony. Are you in favor of the commission being extended or in opposition? That's the bill before us.
I think that if we were going to cut any money in the budget anywhere right now and we had to pick a commission to cut, I don't think they're doing their job, and I don't think they need to be there. I have talked to too many people who have turned in too many complaints where there's nothing been done. And what is important is in the broker's manual, it actually states that the action taken should be consistent with prior actions taken for similar offenses. And the response that I got from that office was, normally we don't do anything in this case, but we spent probably 2 weeks working on it. You know that I get involved in different projects quite extensively, and I provided a lot of material. I provided signed, notarized documents and showed where the real estate laws were broken, and nothing was done. And so I guess I would be in favor of not continuing the real estate commission because they're not being effective right now, and there's no point in spending the money on it. But if they are going to stay open, I would like them to reopen my case and enforce the law the way the law reads at the time of the violation.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, is there anyone else waiting to testify on House Bill 290? Well, the public hearing is closed. Ms. Hovedin, are you there? Sorry, I was looking up at OffNet.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Jamie Hovedin. I'm the Division Director for Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. I'd like to make a brief comment, and then I can answer any questions after that. Thank you. Okay. I want to express our appreciation to Chris Curtis and her team for the quality of the audit that we received. We always appreciate their scrutiny and valuable insight into our processes and our opportunities to improve. In looking at the 2015 legislative budget and audit, it did make two recommendations. The first was the master errors and emissions insurance policy for the real estate licensees. Much work has been put into trying to obtain such a policy. This endeavor took a long road and got hung up at every stage. Last November, we did put out an information to bid soliciting for bidders for that master policy after the regulations were completed in 2014. There were no bidders, and the feedback that we did get was that the premiums that we set in regulations were just too low, and that the there wasn't enough information on the risk pool. There's not enough people out there with errors in emission insurance to be able to evaluate the risk. The Real Estate Commission is working hard on researching additional information that can assist in the regulations to address those concerns, and hope to be putting out another ITB invitation to bid very soon. The last item involves investigation, and Chief Investigator Angela Burt came to us from the military in 2014 and has just done a spectacular job with streamlining and getting standard operating procedures to make major improvements in our investigative unit. One of the items noted is the unexplained gaps, where a file might linger for an extended period of time. She has instituted some simple solutions by establishing a tickler system to give notice to the investigators that they've got gaps. Some of those gaps are as a result of referring the cases to the Attorney General's office, and the tickler system extends to even following up with the Attorney General's office so that we have no unexplained gaps. The gap period has been incorporated as a core element in the investigator's performance evaluation and as part of the supervisor's quarterly review of all team members to ensure they are achieving unit goals of no unexplained investigative gaps. It's worth noting that the board is operating in the black. As a matter of fact, they have recently experienced a reduction in their fees due to their large surplus. In closing, we need the Real Estate Commission to guide the profession and guide our division in the regulation of the profession. Whether or not the board is in existence, the licensing requirements are still in statutes and regulations, and people are still required to be licensed. They are best served by the board. We appreciate the board's service to the profession, the division, and the citizens of Alaska.
Thank you for those comments. With that, we're setting House Bill 290 aside. I'd like the committee to reopen House Bill 41. Is the Attorney General online? Assistant AG Seth Bosang, and if I could invite Representative Tilton and Crystal Kieneman, staff to HB 41, and Representative Tilton. Seth, are you there?
Madam Chairman, this is Seth Bosang, Assistant Attorney General.
Are you aware that we've just adopted Amendment Number 2?
I am now, Madam Chairman.
Could you tell us what that effectively does to Alaska state statute if this bill passes?
Madam Chairman, Amendment 2 would exempt incidental fishing from the definition of sport fishing guide services. So a client is incidentally fishing, a guide in that situation would not need a sport fishing guide license.
Thank you. If I could go to Bernard, is it Kasten Chasten, Alaska Wildlife Troopers?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bernard Chastain. I'm the Deputy Director for the Alaska Wildlife Troopers.
Can you tell me, this is Senator McKinnon, can you enforce the language that was just adopted in the amendment?
Madam Chair, the term incidental is very ambiguous. and it presents a situation for enforcement that is going to be very difficult for us to determine what incidental actually is. We have no ability to determine how much fishing actually occurred prior or how much hunting occurred prior, and the term incidental creates a situation where we, our troopers are certainly not going to have that ability to determine that at that time.
Thank you. Mr. Brookover.
Yes, Madam Chair. Tom Brookover, Division Director, Sport Fish Division.
Do you have any comments on the amendment that we just adopted?
Madam Chair, I don't have any comments other than anything to add to Mr. Bosanger, Mr. Chastain.
Thank you very much. Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Representative Kathy Tilton, House District 12, Chugiak, Mat-Su. HB 41 reinstates a licensure and vessel registration program for fishing guides and fishing guide service operators that was in place on December 31st, 2014, and has now been, with the amendment, is just for saltwater. Under the revised bill, the Division of Sport Fish will register all vessels used in guided sport fishing trips, issue identifying decals for those vessels, and license all sport fish operators and guides. The reporting is no longer required by the bill. Sport fishing operators and guides are currently required to fulfill reporting requirements in addition to operator and guide registration and vessel registration requirements by regulation. The department issues logbooks to all sport fishing operators for recording harvest and effort data, compiles and analyzes the logbook data, and publishes an annual report on vessel registration, operator, and guide registration and logbook activity. This information is needed to help preserve our allocation of our fish resources.
Representative Tilton, do you support amendment number 2 that was added to the bill?
Madam Chair, I prefer the amendment number 2 that was added to the bill is not added to the bill.
Thank you. 350s. Senator Kelly.
Madam Chair, I move that we rescind our action on amendment number 2.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, amendment number 2 is rescinded. Senator Michiki, can you walk through the fiscal note?
Yes, Madam Chair. I have a single fiscal note from the Department of Fish and Game. The appropriation of sport fisheries, the allocation is the same, and the OMB component number is 464. Madam Chair, this shows total operating due to this bill of $100,000 a year for FY17 and FY18, which is reduced to $75,000 a year in FY19. Shows a change in revenues of $343,000 in FY17, $390,000 in FY18, $46,800 in FY19. But Madam Chair, I believe we need some revisions since we removed freshwater from this bill, so we will be looking forward to receiving an updated fiscal note.
Thank you. Senator Michiki, I believe personnel services should be reduced by about 50%? About 50% of the fiscal note that we have with us. So forthcoming fiscal note. Senator Michiki, you have a motion.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move the Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 41 Finance 29-LS0238/S.
As amended
from committee with the forthcoming fiscal note and committee recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, the Senate CS for the CS for House Bill number 41 Finance as amended /S moves from committee. Brief at ease. we're back on the record. Today's April 16th. Just to let the public know what's on our agenda for tomorrow, Sunday, April 17th at 8 a.m., we'll have a presentation, SB 130 tax credits, followed by HB 289, HB 143, HB 268, HB 290, HB 314, HB 259. With that, we're going to the floor. Because it's the last, or getting into the last moments of session, I'm going to recess us in case we need something for finance if something should happen. But I don't expect that to happen. But we're at recess. I apologize that we're using terminology here, though we'd all like to go outside and play, and that could be called recess. We need to adjourn for the night. There is no more floor session. We're adjourned.